Unit 1.1a, the structure and function of the skeletal system, unit details. Within this unit you need to know the following. Firstly, you need to know the names and the locations of 19 bones. Next, you need to know the 6 functions of the skeleton and how these aid a sports person's performance. In addition to this, you also need to know about the different types of joints in the body, the location of these joints, the articulating bones that make up these joints, and the 6 movement types that are possible at them. Finally, you need to know about the roles of cartilage, tendons, and ligaments at a joint, and how they help a sports person to perform the sporting actions needed within their activity. Unit 1.1a, the structure and function of the skeletal system, recording number 1. In this recording, I will discuss the 19 major bones in the skeleton. The adult skeleton has 206 bones and they provide the framework for all movement. You'll be pleased to know that you only need to know 19 of these bones. I'd recommend that whilst you're listening to this recording, you have your workbook notes open so that you can look at the diagrams to help you visualise the bones that I'm talking about. If you don't have your notes to hand, then Google labelled skeleton and find a diagram to look at. Working from top to bottom, I will now tell you the names of the 19 bones that you need to know. I will also describe where they are located. First, we have the cranium, which you may more commonly know as the skull. This is located at the top of the head and it is a hard, flat bone that provides a protective case around the brain. The vertebrae, which you may know as the spinal column, runs from your head to your lower body. It is made up of 33 interlocking bones. Next, we have the clavicle. The clavicle goes across from under the neck to the shoulder and is more commonly known as the collarbone. However, in an exam, you must refer to this as the clavicle, as collarbone would not be accepted. Next, we have the scapula. This is an unusual shaped bone that helps to form the shoulder joint and expands around to the upper back. This is commonly known as the shoulder blade, but again, we must refer to it as its correct anatomical name, which in this case is the scapula. In the chest, we have the sternum and the ribs. The sternum runs vertically down the front of the chest and is connected to the ribs by cartilage. The ribs and the sternum form a protective cage around vital organs such as the heart and the lungs. The bone in the upper arm that helps to form the shoulder joint is called the humerus. Then below the elbow we have the radius and the ulna, which form the lower arm. The hand is made up of 27 bones which are grouped and called 3 names. First we have the carpals, which make up the wrist. Then we have the metacarpals, which form the main bone of the hand. And then finally the phalanges, which is the correct anatomical name for the fingers and the toes. Moving on to the lower body, at the hips we have the pelvis. This articulates with the femur to make the hip joint. The femur is the long bone at the top of the leg that runs where your thigh is. This is the longest bone in the body and is a particularly nasty one to break, really bad injury. At the knee we have the patella, which to look at is a small circular bone, and you may already know this as the kneecap. In the lower leg we have the tibia and the fibula. The tibia is the larger of the two bones and it makes up the knee joint along with the femur. The foot is made up in a similar way to the hand. At the top of the foot we have the tarsals. Then the metatarsals, which are usually the bones that someone has broken if they claim that they have a broken foot. Finally, the toes, like the fingers, are also known as phalanges, so it should be easy to remember that one. In your exam, you may be presented with a diagram of any of these bones and be asked to identify or label them, so it is important that you know all of their correct anatomical names as well as their locations. Unit 1.1a, the structure and function of the skeletal system, recording number 2. In this recording, I will discuss the functions of the skeleton. There are 6 of these, and I will discuss blood cell production, mineral storage, and movement in this recording, and the other 3 in the next recording. The first function of the skeleton is blood cell production. Some of our longer bones, such as the femur and the humerus, have bone marrow inside them. All of our red blood cells are created in this bone marrow, as well as the majority of our infection-fighting white blood cells. This function is important to a sports person, as the red blood cells produced in the bone marrow carry oxygen to the working muscles during performance. This function would be used by a marathon runner to supply the oxygen to the hamstrings, quadriceps and gastrocnemius muscles in the legs to create energy by combining with glucose, and this will also offset fatigue by removing waste products. This will allow them to keep running and to sustain a good pace throughout the entire 26.2 miles. The next function of the skeleton is mineral storage. Our bones store important minerals such as iron and calcium. Iron helps to form hemoglobin in the red blood cells, which allows the body to transport the oxygen, as we've just discussed. Calcium is essential for the process of building and repairing tissue, such as the bones themselves. It helps to make the bones stronger. This function is important to a sports person, as by storing calcium, the bones will be strong and less likely to experience a fracture. This function would be used by a rugby player when they are being tackled. The ribs form a strong cage around the organs, protecting them, and the ribs are able to take the force of the tackle without breaking, and this prevents the organs from becoming damaged. The player would also be able to produce a stronger tackle themselves with a reduced risk of injury due to the increased strength of the bones. Now, this is not to say that the bones won't ever break because of this function, because obviously they still can. But if we didn't store minerals that strengthened them at all, then these fractures would be much more common. The final function I will discuss in this recording is movement. The skeleton allows the body to move. The bones meet together to form joints, and these act as levers to produce movement. The surfaces of the bones allow the muscles to attach to them by tendons. When the muscle contracts, it shortens and this pulls on the bone, which is what causes movement. This function is important to all sports people, as every sport requires performers to complete specific actions or to move in particular ways. An example of when movement would be important would be in football. The skeletal and muscular systems work together to allow a player to strike a ball. The gluteals contract to pull on the femur to extend their leg behind them with a wide range of movement. Then as a leg shows flexion to come forward, the quadriceps contract to pull on the tibia and straighten and extend the knee, which allows the player to strike the ball with power. Without this range of movement, the action would not be performed as effectively. Unit 1.1a, the structure and function of the skeletal system, recording number 3. In this recording, I will discuss the next three functions of the skeleton. In the previous recording, I discussed blood cell production, mineral storage, and movement. So in this one, I will cover posture, protection, and support. The first function in this recording is posture. Our skeleton provides the body with shape. If you think about the human body and all the other components other than the bones, they're quite soft, and without the bones forming the framework for the muscles and the organs, our body would resemble a watery blob on the floor. Bones such as the vertebrae hold us upright and give us good posture. The skeleton also allows us to hold the correct posture needed for a variety of sports. For example, in gymnastics, a performer will need to present at the beginning and the end of their routine with good posture, as well as when landing complex skills, in order to perform an aesthetically pleasing movement and look good. This will allow them to avoid deductions from the judges and to score more points. The next function I will discuss is protection. The bones of the skeleton are very tough. These protect the internal organs and reduce the risk of injury on impact. For example, the cranium protects the brain, the ribs and the sternum protect the heart and lungs, and the vertebrae protects the spinal cord. This function is vital across sport, especially in sports which involve contact. For example, In boxing, the cranium will protect the brain, as when a boxer is struck by a powerful punch, such as a right cross, the cranium will absorb the impact and reduce the risk of a life-threatening injury. The final function of the skeleton is support. This is similar in description to posture, but these are considered to be separate. The bones of the skeleton form a framework, and they are held together by ligaments. This allows them to support the body's weight in a variety of positions. This function helps us to balance, which is obviously very important across many sports. For example, in gymnastics, the skeleton supports the gymnast to perform movements such as a handstand or an arabesque effectively. Another example would be from football. When striking a ball, the skeleton supports the player whilst they are on one leg temporarily. This allows the other leg to swing through to kick the ball. If the skeleton did not support the player effectively, then their shot would not travel where it was intended to, or it would lack power. Unit 1.1a, the structure and function of the skeletal system, recording number 4. In this recording, I will discuss the locations, different types, and articulating bones of the 4 major joints in the human body. A joint is where 2 or more bones meet and where movement takes place. There are 2 types of joints in the body that you need to be aware of for your exam. These are called hinge joints and ball and socket joints. A hinge joint works like a hinge on a door, and it only allows bending and straightening actions, which are known as flexion and extension. The elbow and the knee are the 2 hinge joints which you need to be able to identify. A ball and socket joint allows movement in almost any direction. The head of one bone forms a ball shape, whilst the other articulating bone makes a cup shape for the ball to fit into. Ball and socket joints allow flexion, extension, abduction, adduction, rotation and circumduction. The 2 ball and socket joints that you need to be aware of are the shoulder and the hip. The bones that meet to create a joint are known as articulating bones. This is a key term, as every year so far, the paper has asked students to name articulating bones that meet to form a joint, and it appears that they are working through the joints each year. The elbow joint is unique, as it is the only one of the 4 joints to have 3 articulating bones. The 3 bones that make up the elbow are the humerus, radius and the ulna. The articulating bones at the knee are the femur and the tibia. It is important not to mention the patella or the fibula, as these do not actually meet at the knee joint. The articulating bones at the hip are the femur and the pelvis. And finally, the articulating bones at the shoulder are the humerus and the scapula. Again, another one that commonly gets mentioned here is the clavicle, but this doesn't meet at the joint to form the shoulder. Unit 1.1a, the structure and function of the skeletal system, recording number 5. In this recording, I will discuss flexion and extension. These are 2 of the 6 types of movement. For this area of the topic, it's really important that you're able to confidently identify these movements, as you may be presented with diagrams or asked to give descriptions or examples in exam. When given a sporting example, make sure that you always give the most obvious answer. Do not make the person who's marking your paper have to think about whether your answer is correct or not. They should already know that it is. Guarantee yourself the mark by stating the obvious. I will give some clear examples in this recording. The first type of movement is flexion. Flexion is possible at both hinge joints and ball and socket joints, and it is the bending movement of a joint. This occurs when the angle of a joint decreases. Here are examples of when flexion would occur at each of the 4 major joints. At the elbow, when a weightlifter lifts the weight upwards during a biceps curl. At the knee, when preparing to kick a football. At the shoulder, when a boxer moves their arm out in front of them to perform a jab. At the hips, when a long jumper brings their legs in front of them to land in the pit. The next type of movement is extension. This is also possible at both hinge and ball and socket joints, and it is the straightening movement of a joint. The angle of the joint increases during extension. Here are the examples of when extension would occur at our four major joints. At the elbow, when a netballer performs a chest pass. At the knee, following a tuck jump in trampolining. At the shoulder, in rowing, when the athlete pulls the oars towards them. At the hip of the back leg of a gymnast when they perform a split leap. Unit 1.1a, the structure and function of the skeletal system, recording number 6. In this recording, I will discuss abduction and adduction, which are the next two types of movement. There are 6 altogether, with the other 4 covered in recordings 5 and 7. The next type of movement is abduction. This is movement away from the midline of the body and is only possible at ball and socket joints. You may remember this by thinking of the verb for abduction, which is abducted. If you were to be abducted by aliens, you would be taken away, just as with abduction, where the limb is taken away from the middle of the body. Abduction would occur at the shoulder in tennis during the follow-through of a backhand shot. Abduction would occur at the hip when performing a straddle jump in trampolining. The next type of movement is adduction. This is the opposite of abduction and is movement towards the middle of the body. It is only possible at ball and socket joints. Adduction would occur at the shoulders and the hips when returning the arms and legs to their original position when performing the breaststroke in swimming or following a star jump. Unit 1.1a, the structure and function of the skeletal system, recording number 7. In this recording, I will discuss circumduction and rotation, which are the next two types of movement. There are 6 altogether, with the others covered in recordings 5 and 6. The next type of movement is circumduction. This is the circular movement of a joint, and this only happens at our ball and socket joints, which are the shoulders and the hips, and it involves the arms or the legs moving in a circular motion. This movement is a combination of all of the other 5 movements put together. Circumduction would occur at the shoulder when bowling the ball in cricket. Circumduction would occur at the hip when performing a step over in football. The final type of movement is rotation. The official definition for this is the turning of a body part around its long axis. This can only occur at the hip and shoulder again, and this is basically when your arm or leg rotates at the socket without a drastic movement. So if you had your arm out in front of you with your palm facing the floor, and then you turn the palm to face the sky, this would be rotation at the shoulder. If you wanted to visualise what rotation at the hip looks like, then if you were to stand facing a wall and turn your foot so that the inside of the foot was facing the wall, and then turn it the other way so the outside was facing the wall, then this would be rotation at the hip. It is incredibly rare for rotation to take place on its own, and this small movement may be disguised by other, larger, more obvious movements. For example, in tennis, when performing a forehand shot, a tennis player may rotate their arm at the shoulder as they strike the ball to apply top spin to the shot. Similar to this in football, a footballer may rotate their leg at the hip as they strike the ball during a free kick, as this will get the ball to swerve in the air away from the goalkeeper. Unit 1.1a, the structure and function of the skeletal system, recording number 8. In this recording, I will discuss the roles of cartilage, tendons and ligaments at a joint and how these connective tissues help movement. Ligaments are our first type of connective tissue that are present at a joint. Ligaments are tough, fibrous and slightly elastic, which means they are flexible and allow a little movement. The main role of ligaments is to connect bone to bone and hold the joint together. For example, you may have heard of the anterior cruciate ligament, which is commonly referred to as the ACL. This is one of the 4 ligaments that helps to keep the knee together by connecting the femur to the tibia. Ligaments also help to stabilise the joints during movement and prevent dislocation by restricting movement outside of the normal range. A tennis player benefits from this when they are changing direction laterally side to side when returning the ball. If their ligaments did not do their jobs, then this explosive action and change of direction could lead to a dislocated knee. The next type of connective tissue at a joint is the tendons. The main role of the tendons is to connect the muscle to the bone and allow movement. Tendons are very strong as they need to be able to withstand the pressure from the contracting muscle and to pull on the bone in order to cause it to move. A weightlifter benefits from this when performing a bicep curl, as the biceps muscle is connected to two tendons, which pull on the radius and the ulna in the lower arm to lift the weight. The final structure at a joint that you need to be aware of is cartilage. The ends of the bones are covered by cartilage. The role of this is to prevent friction between the bones. Cartilage also acts as a shock absorber during repetitive actions such as running. A marathon runner benefits from this as the cartilage absorbs the impact at the knee from the leg hitting the pavement repeatedly over the duration of the race. It also stops the bones from rubbing together and causing pain, allowing the runner to remain comfortable and to focus on their best race pace.